I believe it's working. I'm gonna turn that around, and it's a very sensitive mic. It'll pick up clear from the hallway, practically, so you don't have to shout.
Yeah.
But I'll cut the...
My voice is, I've had a tumor in it, see?
In your throat?
Cured, supposed to have been, and I was back to Mayo's this summer, and they found out it was nothing but a wart in there, and they burned it out.
Is that so?
Yeah.
But it left a little horse.
Supposed to, yeah, it left me hoarse. Well, I've been that way for 9 years. The first time they considered it a tumor then.
Uh-huh.
And the last time when they operated in June, I think it was. Yeah, in June. 1st to the 10th of June. It was nothing but a wart then.
Well, thank goodness for that. That's good. Your name is Glenn Burrell?
That's right.
And Mr. Burrell, where were you born?
Stockville, Nebraska.
Stockville?
Frontier and County, Nebraska.
Frontier County, Nebraska. And when were you born?
18th day of December, 1893.
So what will that... You are what?
80 years old last December. I'm pushing 81.
By golly, that's right. You sure are.
Yeah, 81. I'll be 81 in December.
And you came to Alaska in what did you tell
1925.
Me? 1925. In 1925. So, and you were then about 34 then.
31.
31, yes. What happened in those 31 years? Tell me about your early life.
Well, I come up here hit Boomtown. I always followed Boomtown, see?
What?
As a construction op.
I see.
Construction, see?
Mm-hmm.
Carpenter and carpenter foreman.
Well, now, what did you do? Where were you raised?
I was raised around Denver, Colorado, at Brighton, Colorado.
In Brighton? Mm-hmm.
Went through the Brighton High Schools there. School and high school. And then, 19, left home when I was 20 years old. Come west then, and up into Idaho in those years, and was married there and had a family of 4 children. 2 sons, 2 daughters. And my oldest daughter died. She had leakage of the heart. She's 9 years old. She got that some kind of enlargement of the heart, anyway. And she died when she's about 27, 28 years old. So then I was divorced. And I come on north then in 1925. Was divorced in 26. I went out divorced about 18 months afterwards. Then I come back up in here, and I've been up here ever since. Outside of, I come back up here and finished about 5 years, or a little over. I left, come back to Fairbanks, and then on to Kennecott, the Kennecott Mines. I was in that. Went up and built a Glacier Creek, 30 miles out of Kennecott, up the Nazina River, and built the Chick Nelson Project for the Kennecott Corporation, about 7 buildings. But it didn't turn out to be another camp. They run out of, they had high-grade copper at first, and then it ran out 30 feet back in, run clear out of copper into a blank wall.
And you called that what was the project?
The Chick Nelson Project.
Chick Nelson?
Yeah.
I'll be darned.
Built the Chick Nelson Project, but it didn't materialize because they didn't run into, they thought they had high-grade copper again, see? They did have that.
But it just wasn't a very large vein of it.
It was a slip-in, yeah, from up on the top of mountains were right on the end there, see? And glaciers, right among glaciers. And movement, you know, of the glacial pushing is what caused that to be in just in certain small bodies, see, and they'd run out of this high grade. I think the Kennicott spent about $200,000 there, but in those years that was a lot of money, you know.
Yes, indeed it was.
That would be 1929.
Did they tunnel back there?
They tunneled back two tunnels, about 90 feet and one crosscut. Crosscutted between the two, but just ordinary country rock after they got in over 20, 30 feet.
I'll be darned.
So...
A fault maybe went through there.
It was a fault, yeah. So...
Well, how did you get your stuff in there to build?
Oh, up the Copper River Northwestern from Cordova. The Kennicotts brought all their stuff in from there, see?
Well, they brought the stuff up the railroad as far as what, McCarthy?
Clear to McCarthy. Then freighted it out with mules. Mule team. 30 miles. And we walked in and out. I walked in there and walked out 30 miles to build a project. I was in there about, I was in there about 3 months and a half building it.
Was that a summer project?
Yes, the
late... When did you go in there? Did you go in the spring or the
fall? No, I went in the middle of the summer.
In the middle of the summer.
Come out just a week before Christmas.
Oh, you did? Well, you got into
the
cold weather.
Yeah, it was cold. Gosh, it was 35, 40 below when I walked out of there. There's one roadhouse 12 miles out on the Nazina River. The rest, you just took a trail and come out.
Can you tell me about that roadhouse? I've never heard about that roadhouse before.
The Nazina... River, yes. Walter Holmes and his wife run it the last years that it was in operation, from about the time the Kennicotts pulled out of there, which was 1938. And Walter Holmes and his wife operated it in the last years, but nobody working is there now. See, McCarthy is just a ghost town now. It has been for, since the railroad closed in 1938. See, that was a liquor town for Kennicott, 4 miles out.
Oh, that I didn't know.
The hook shops were all out there.
I see.
And Prohibition days, they had, they didn't allow them in or selling liquor in Kennicott, see?
Of course.
So that was, there was about 80 people lived there.
Is that right?
They had two general stores. And I can tell you the names of the men that run that. O'Neill's run it. That's Mike O'Neill of Anchorage. His uncles run that. That was, what's that first name? Jack and Charlie O'Neill run the store. And there was four or five different bootlegging joints there. And the fellow that runs that big nightclub in Kodiak today, he had a place in there. He was, and his name is Roy Snyder. He had a place there. They called them pool halls then, you know. They had to have some kind of a something to alibi, you know, to sell whiskey by the drink.
Where did they get the liquor, I wonder?
We made it right there.
Oh, really?
Oh, it was made right there, yeah. The guys went out in the bush and made it.
They had their own stills?
Right, they had their own stills operated in there, yeah. Up McCarthy Creek, there was two of them operating up there.
I haven't heard that before.
I shouldn't be telling.
Oh, sure.
These fellas' names, you know.
No. Oh, yeah. No. This is...
They're still alive. I know some of them.
Yeah, there would be no...
Two of them that are still alive. One's over at Eagle now.
Well,
they're... One down in Kodiak.
Yeah, there's no problem because this material is going into the university library, into the what they call the archives.
Oh yeah.
For future reference, for.
I see. Yeah.
And but besides that, legally there is no way that anything could be involved with this.
Yeah, I don't want to get.
No, it's long past.
A lot of people are my friends. See?
Of course, I understand. Sure. But I've heard that there were stills up here, but it never registered with me. I came up in the 40s,
yeah.
And I can remember back in the Anchorage area,
yeah.
People were talking about having stills, but it didn't dawn on me that it was the Prohibition. And then, of course...
Oh, it was all Prohibition.
Yeah, sure.
I think they went out in about 1918, didn't they? About 18 or 1918.
Is when it began.
Come back and, yeah, when it began.
That's right. Yeah.
In 1932 or 34.
It's when it was repealed.
Roosevelt was in. Franklin D.
Roosevelt. Franklin. Yes.
Franklin D. Roosevelt.
I was writing down these names because I thought when I have to go down to Anchorage, I thought I would look them up and ask them about it, you know.
Yeah.
And let them tell me about it too, you know.
If you go to Kodiak,
yeah.
Why don't you go into Roy Snyder's? He owns that big nightclub there.
Yes, I'll do that.
Do you know Roy Snyder?
No, I don't know him. No,
well,
but
he
I'll
was
go look
one of
up.
Them. He was one of them at McCarthy.
Uh-huh.
He ran a pool hall there and sold drinks, the same as like he's doing down there now. He called it the same name of the club that he's got there. And he had one here in Fairbanks. Built a big one there. Cost him $20,000-$30,000. Here had looking glasses all over the top, so you could look up there and see anybody now.
Yes, mirrors up and up. Now was that
right down here on 3rd Avenue, 2nd Avenue or 3rd Avenue? 2nd Avenue.
Hmm.
I forget. It's the name of the same name as he's. I forget what he calls them all. Just one name.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in business all his life, and he's in that nightclub business. Roy Snyder, he's an old friend of mine, yeah.
Well, I will look him up.
You look him up at Kodiak, yeah.
Well, now, did you originally meet him there at McCarthy?
That's where I first met
Except
him.
That it was 4 miles down the road.
4 miles this side?
This side.
Of Kennicott.
Of Kennicott.
You have to go to McCarthy, then go on 4 miles. Right up on the hillside. Then the buckets lines go up into the mountains. 7 miles and 4 miles. All that copper come down to the mill at Kennicott. Through electric buckets, skyline. Have you ever seen a skyline? You don't know what I'm talking about then. It's hard to explain what it is. There's several of them in Alaska. The Independence Mine had a skyline too. Good cable line where the buckets come down with the ore.
Yes, I've seen those. I know what you
well,
mean.
Well, that's what it is, yeah, skyline.
Yes, I didn't know that was called a skyline. Sure.
Bucket line or a skyline.
Yes.
And the only way you could get up there was ride one of them buckets
to
up
To ride
there.
The buckets up to the mine.
That's right, 4 miles and 7 miles. Went to the Jumbo, the Mother Lode, the Erie, and the Bonanza. All four of them. I worked in all four of them. I worked as a timber, head timberman in there. Timbering up to keep the stopes from falling in. See? When they took the copper out, you'd put in timbers to keep from falling in.
How did that ore look inside there?
The highest ore in the world. The highest test copper ore in the world. As high as 86%. You can't beat that. Rich.
I'll bet that was beautiful. It must have been a lot of green and blue in the ore. Were the tunnels, did they actually have the color of the blue and the green?
Huh?
What did the rock look like?
All colors.
Was it?
Copper comes in blue, green, green or any kind, all kinds of colors. See? Some of them are like this. Colors like that, see?
This is a...
That isn't a...
Well, that looks like a piece of jade.
Yeah, it is a piece of jade. I guess it is.
Yeah. Well, that's a
I carry it for a
jade.
Lucky piece, though.
Well, that's a beautiful piece of jade. Now,
yeah.
This my ring here is chrysocolla, which came out of the copper. This is chrysocolla.
Yeah.
Came from the copper mine down at Globe.
Yeah.
But it's a different, you know, different than the Kennicott stuff. But
yeah.
I've seen that that Kennicott rock.
Yeah, well, at least I don't think it's Kennicott.
No.
That's just a lucky piece that I got.
But that's a real pretty piece of tape.
That could be Epidotes, too. See, Epidotes shows a cause of upheaval. Where there is no upheaval, there is no minerals. Had to have upheavals. Epidotes, that looked like a piece of Epidote to me.
I'll bet it's jade, but it's real pretty. Yeah, I think
it might be jade, yeah.
Anyway, so
These rocks are hard to tell what they are.
Hard to tell what they are, that's true.
And where they come from, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That looks a lot like Kobuk jade, yeah. But it's a real pretty piece of it. But now, go on and tell me, you stoped the... You worked in the stopes.
Them big stopes, the biggest stopes I ever saw. Some of them as much as 1,000 feet long and 50 feet across, like that.
Huge.
But they'd come all at an angle out like that, and they'd take that high grade out. Then they'd put a stope up with big poles. Timber, you know, up from the bottom up to hold up those stopes.
Or the top of the shaft.
Taking that rich copper out, yeah.
I see.
Then they left lots of square stopes in the stope. Well, abutment square run clear to the top to hold them too. And they're immensely rich with high grade copper in there yet. But they're all caved in, big end of them. Now, you know, and I think you'd have to do a whole set of too much work to get them out. But to go around and go up McCarthy Creek to the Green Butte is another big high grade copper in there. It's never been taken out. They'll take that out with trucks. There's millions and millions of dollars worth of high grade copper left in there. I've seen it. I know what I'm talking about. I've seen it there. Yeah.
Kennicott still owns it.
Kennicott never did own it.
Well, they didn't.
Not the Green Butte, not around it. Up McCarthy Creek, no, sir. Kennicott tried to take it out of there, but that old guy from New York had owned him. Another company, see? He took a few carloads out, see, after the road went in. He started to take some out. He's a wealthy old devil, too. Multimillionaire. And he was 82 or 84 years old then. And he sent a couple of flat cars, or gondolas, I guess it was flat cars, stacked up with this high grade out. And the only way he could get it out, ship it over the 198 miles of railroad from McCarthy to Cordova. Well, the Kennicotts owned, the Guggenheims owned the railroad. The Guggenheims owned the steamship. So when he took it, they took it off for him, put it on their steamship, took it to the Tacoma smelter, which is the only smelter. The Guggenheims owned the smelter. So when they come back, they sent him back a bill for freight. He received no money. They sent him a bill for freight. That made a man mad, you know.
They really had him over a barrel, didn't they?
Had him right where they wanted him. We had him, and they was going to take everything out of there themselves. So the old man says, "You'll never take this copper out." And they never did. That copper is all in there right
now. Who was that, I wonder? Do you remember his name?
No. He was a New York. He was a millionaire.
Yeah.
I don't remember
his
name.
One of the big industrialists. How did he come out of the come by the property? How did he get the property originally, I wonder?
He bought it somewhere before the Kennicotts did.
He did.
About the same time. I don't know the history of that. Yeah.
Oh, but therein lies a tale, you know?
But I'm telling you, the copper's there. I know it.
Sure?
I've seen it, yeah. I know it. And I've been mining off and on all my life, and I know what copper is when I see it. I know what gold is when I see it.
Well, now, how long did you work there at Kennicott that time?
It was 2 years. It was 29 and 30. I went out in 1930. I hit the big Boulder Dam. Boulder, and I was on that, a foreman on that, putting in that dam, Boulder Dam coming up. And on the intake towers of Boulder. For three, and that'd be I went in out in the fall of 1930. In 31, 32, and 34, I worked at parts of the time. I worked parts of the years, not all the time. I worked steady. I prospecting through the San Bernardino Mountains. I prospected all over that. And I hit a Big Bear Lake. I hit some gold in there. And I promoted it. And got 8,000 in the height of the Depression. Promotions. Oh, to Los Angeles Underworld. Bought into it, see? They were the only ones that had any money in 1931, 32, and 34. Height of the Depression, you know, with those gamblers. In the Hollywoods, they run... The Golden Brothers was their name. One of them got killed from flying Chinese through over the line for money. Got shot down. He was... I don't know much about that. Anyway, they... Through this promotion, two guys promotion, two real estate men, another guy and I got 8,000 out of it. I got about 6,000 out of it. The other guy got about 2, because I was the main guy that found it. See, he knew it was there, but he didn't know how to estimate it. Up at Big Bear Lake, that's Los Angeles Playground now. It's the other side of Lake Arrowhead. You've been down there. You know where Lake Arrowhead is, Big Bear. Chinese Gardens out a mile and a half is where the strike was. But it was a small, just out by a fox farm, see? Just a small arroyo. And it didn't figure big enough for a big company to take hold of. Figured about 280 some odd thousand dollars worth of placer in the woods.
It was placer?
You're all placer, yeah.
I see.
Same as this is around here.
How did you estimate it then?
I estimated it by the pan.
By the pan?
Pan is 143 pans to a yard. And if you can get a cent to the pan, you got 143 cents to the yard. Don't you see?
$1.43, right there.
If you got 2 cents to the pan, you got double that. If you got 3 cents to the pan, you got three times 143. That's the way I estimate all. Engineers come in and estimated it. I said it'd go $2.50. $2.50 to the yard. And I was getting a little over a cent, a little over 2 cents, around 2 cents to the
pan. Close to 2 cents.
Yeah, probably 2 cents. So they estimated it. They took a canvas, 8 foot square, took a sample here, down there, and over here, and off there, and all over. 8 samples, put them together and shook them all the way to sea. And then took a sample out of it, samples out of it, and they gave me $2.56. I missed it 6 cents. That's pretty good. That's estimating pretty close.
That's pretty close.
I do all my own estimating. I can go right up the creek here and estimate it. With an estimating machine, get so much.
Now, how can you figure the quantity of yardage?
Well, you've got to figure the size of your creek. And the size of your wash, whatever it is, at your certain depth, for your length of it and your width of it. That'll give you the amount of thousands of yards that you can handle.
So and what do you do? You
another thing you've got to figure is your overburden. If you've got to handle all that overburden, it's going to cut your clearance down to a small amount. If you can get rid of that with a bulldozer, scrape off your overburden, it isn't pay. Down against your bedrock, within 3 feet of bedrock is where your pay is. 9 out of 10 for a creek, see? Some places will pay for grass roots now. For 100 feet. That's at the head of the Chestachina River did that. Slate Creek. At the head of the Chestachina River, paid from grass roots now.
Trying to think where the Chestachina is.
That's out there at, you go over the Tok Highway. Chestachina River, just the other side of Gokona. You turn off the side of Gokona and go up to 33 Mile What's the name of that place?
Slate Creek. I know where it is.
Slate Creek, yeah.
I know.
Way up there, you got to fly in there.
Yep. There is a lodge up there. There's a hunting lodge or something.
The man right there, the man is dead that owns the Gokona Roadhouse. What was his name? She's alive yet?
Henra.
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 No, I hate it.
Yeah, the Gokona Roadhouse has been run for years by
Gokona.
Arnie Sunt. And his mother is Henra.
His dad died. That's the man I'm talking about, Arnie.
Yeah?
He died in 1948. He's the fellow that had charge of it to begin with up there. And he come down and built that roadhouse.
Yeah?
That would be about early 1930s.
I see.
Yeah. Arnie Sunt.
Yeah?
The boy is up there doing some mining now, I understand.
Well, I heard that too. I was down there this summer
charge
and I stopped in
mining.
To see where
that's
he was.
Slate Creek.
And they said, well, he was up,
up
mining. Yeah, you've got to
fly in there.
Yeah, I was never in there, but I've heard about it, and they've been working on it.
It took several million dollars out of there.
Is that right?
That was rich, but it's awful deep ground. And there's some big slugs in there, a lot of big slugs. Yeah, but I have never been in there. But I know the Sunts. I knew Arnie well. He was quite a wino.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, I heard that.
He was a drinker, heavy drinker. And he broke his foot, ankle, about 1943 or 4. I believe it was a car wreck or something. He broke that ankle. And he drank so doggone much of that, it'd never heal up, see?
Oh, my.
You know, that wine will go to your feet, you know, the lowest part of your body. And if you got a sore there, it'll just stay open all the time.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, these winos are terrible. There's some of them around the anchors there. They get scabby in the feet, even. The poison goes to your feet. The poison in any person's system goes out through the bottom of your feet.
Well, of course, sure enough.
Yeah, and if you keep drinking too much of that wine, it's nothing but poison, and they can't get out fast enough. And it'll open up in running sores. Some of those winos are terrible, see. I never was much of a drinking man. I like to drink now and then. I handled it in the freight line. I owned the freight line out of Fairbanks here after I quit the FE in 1928 and 29.
When you came up here in 25, did you go to work for the FE company?
That's who I worked for, FE company.
Oh, I see.
I was a foreman right here in charge of the crews of Garden Island.
Well, now, what was on Garden Island?
We built the office buildings. That's the first concrete blocks that was ever poured or made in Alaska, was in that brick building. Have you seen the building?
The big brick building over here?
Yeah, the office building. And they're tearing down. Yeah, we're tearing down. They're tearing down the big power plant. Now I built that, too. Charge of the crews building that. And the warehouses, a couple of warehouses. That was 1925, 1926. 26, the big power plant was built. It was a city power here for years, too.
Yes, I know that.
Yeah.
Now, but you poured the first bricks, the first concrete blocks.
First concrete blocks was made right there. I had charge of the crews. They made them square 8 by 8 by 16.
Where did you get them? Where did you get them? What did you use for the material?
Used cement and gravel. Cement and gravel.
Gravel from the local gravel
cars.
Yeah,
gravel pit, yeah.
And
screen gravel.
I see.
And poured with concrete about 3-in-1. Mixture. Makes a good mixture, see? 3 or 4-in-1. I forget what the mix is.
And the forms. You built the forms.
No, you buy the machine to make them blocks. Handmade by hand. Now they got a power. They make them with these brick factories with mostly power, all power. But you tamped it with a tamper, see? It made each individual brick.
Well, now, were they hollow inside?
That's right,
hollow. They were hollow inside.
3 different compartments of hollow.
I see.
Just the way they are today. Same thing. But you made them by hand with a pallet and a square machine on it and clamped it, then let the clamp loose and take it loose and pick it up and set it out and let it dry for about Well, they have to dry up when they're weak. Then they get just as hard as can be, you know. Solid cement. Just like concrete sidewalk out there. You can go look at those bricks. You can see they're handmade. You walk up close to them. But they're not factory made. Made with a pallet.
How come they decided to build, to make concrete block building on?
Well, because I guess warmer or something.
Yeah, it had been proven successful.
Yeah. That's the first concrete building was ever built in Alaska. And the first concrete sidewalks was built right there, too. They thought, everybody said that they'd all swell up and break. But you couldn't pour them. The old timers all said, oh, that cement will never work here.
Is that right?
Got to put board sidewalks. All of Fairbanks was board sidewalks. One end to the other, of course, it wasn't very big then. There's only about 3,000 inhabitants in those years. So was Anchorage, same thing, all board sidewalks. Oh, you never seen any cement. You didn't see any cement around Alaska much until the Second World War.
But this cement worked down here, the concrete in front of that building, in front of the FE Company building, where you built the building and poured those sidewalks.
Yeah, yeah.
That worked out.
Sure.
It didn't crack. And
it was proven there, yeah.
Yes.
They'll heave a little bit, but not much. But there, all these sidewalks will heave a little.
Yeah.
You notice, but not much.
Mm-hmm.
But they all figured you couldn't have cement sidewalks here in Alaska to account of the freezing.
I've got plenty of tape. What else did you do while you worked for the FE Company?
Well, I just worked here in Garden Island.
Uh-huh. And this was
I was out with them for 2 years till they cut wages. They cut wages, and when they put the first dredge to work in Fox and Gilmore, right here, 7 or 8 miles now. That's the first dredge they put, and they cut wages. See, we was getting, carpenters were getting $1.50 an hour. That was big wages. We worked 10-hour shifts, $15 a day. That's what I went to work at first. But C.E. Alexander took me off of that and gave me a foreman job, handling the crews, see, on the town side, labor crews.
Why did they cut wages, I wonder?
Well, when they went in production, everyone does that. Every one of these companies that start out to build a company and put near every boom town, when they're building it, they pay the big wages. So, as soon as they go in production, they did the same thing at Whittier, in that sawmill. I went down there in 1945 helped place the machinery as a millwright in there. And the minute they went into production, they cut wages. They wanted me to stay with them as a millwright on less wages, but more time. They said I could make as much money. But I never would do that. I always quit. I'd always quit a job and tell them, well, you can always raise my pay, but you can't never duck me. Or I'll go somewhere else. I was a first-class mechanic. I could go and get a job anywhere. Anytime I wanted to work at millwright work or carpenter work. That's all carpenter work, the whole thing. Placing machinery and sawmills and cutting out and putting in the machinery, you know. You have to build to suit the machinery. And you got to know blueprints. You got to be educated to that job. You're not only a carpenter, you're a foreman, that's what you are. In other words, you're more of an engineer than you are anything else. I could always go get a job, but I've done that all over Alaska. I did it at Nome.
Well, now you told me that you had...
In 45.
When they cut the wages here, then you started your own trucking business.
A freighting outfit. I bought owned and operated the first long-distance freight line out of Fairbanks going south over the trail. Called it the Valdez Trail then. Now it's the Richardson Highway. The old Richardson Highway.
That was the Valdez Trail,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. We had no bridge at Big Delta. That was McCarthy then. The name of that was McCarthy. There was a ferry across the road at...
Across the Tananaw River.
The Tananaw River, Big Delta.
Yes.
An old Swedish woman owned that. I forget her name now. She owned the roadhouse there. But the government owned the ferry. And it was only in operation from, that'd only be 4 months. From the time the ice goes out until it starts freezing, and they had to pull the ferry out then.
Yeah, about 5 months.
Four and a half, about.
Yeah, sometime in May until it frees up in late September, early October.
Well, you have to get it out of there a week before that ice starts running.
I see.
And that ice starts running just as soon as it... that ice will start running in about 3 weeks now.
Well, that's right. It sure
3 weeks.
Yeah?
Yeah, by the first of October. You got to have it out there before that. About the 20th of September, they pull that out.
The ferry.
So
what was that ferry like? What kind of a ferry was it?
Well, it had fins on it. And it had a cable across. And it had fins, and you pointed it this way. Pointed it this way, and the water's coming down here. It's that fin pushed it across. So then when you get it to the other side, you turn it this way, it's that fin and pushes it back. Right straight back and forth.
Well, whether it was on a cable across?
A cable line and a big pulley up on it runs across.
I see, and then the water pressure against that fin pushes it back
and forth. It's that fin pushes it back and forth.
How about that?
You can't do that only certain types of rivers. If they're too long, we can't do it. So I understand now. I don't know too much about
that. I imagine that's true. And right there, where the Tananaw comes in by that bluff.
And it has to be so swift.
It's a fast, fairly deep. It narrows down and gets real deep and fast right through there.
You don't need a bit of power. It don't cost a nickel
to run it back and forth.
To run that thing back and forth. Only a little oil.
Yeah?
After oil.
Keep it greased up a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, now, what kind of trucks? Let's see, this is what, 1929?
No, I had a 1928 GMC, a Pontiac motor, just a ton truck. They didn't have any dual treads in those years. Dual treads come out in 1928 or 29. And this was, I think, a 27 that I got. Anyway, just a year before dual treads. There was no such a thing as dual wheels then, just single. But it was big bloom tires, big heavy tires. I could haul about 2.5 tons on that ton truck, flatbed. But the road was, you'd have to back up in spots to, if you ever met anybody.
So narrow.
Whoever was could back up the easiest and didn't have to go the longest would back up and let the other person.
Well, how did they get their freight up from Valdez before that?
They got them from, I didn't freight from Valdez. I freighted from Fairbanks South, and a freighter from Valdez freighted from Valdez to Gulcana. That's less than halfway. I freighted 186 miles to Paxton, Paxton Roadhouse. Then I did take some freight on to Sourdough. Sourdough Roadhouse, Hazel whacked her, run that. She had a big fox farm there.
Oh, there was a fox farm at Sourdough.
Yeah, Hazel whacked her running. All blue foxes.
Hmm.
She and, what was his name? See, he used to be a telegrapher. The Valdez Trail had a telegraph instruments first. Then in 1924 or 5, 3 or 4, they put it over to telephone, run a telephone line. But at first, it was telegraph system for years. And he was a telegrapher. Tiki was his name. Hazel and Tiki.
Wexler.
Hazel Wachter.
Wachter.
Wachter brothers owned the meat markets when the railroad was being built.
Here in Fairbanks? Anchorage and Fairbanks. Wachters owned the meat markets.
There was only one meat market in the house, in the town. Wachter brothers owned it in the same way in Anchorage. Because the town of only about 2,500, 3,000. Only needed one meatway. meat market.
Well, you freighted from here down to Paxton.
Paxton.
And then sometimes on to Sourdough. Now, how would the freight, what would you carry?
Carry whatever they called for. And there was no special. Sometimes I'd run twice a week. Maybe I wouldn't run once in 2 weeks.
Now, what were you doing? Taking supplies to the roadhouses?
Taking supplies to the roadhouses.
From Fairbanks?
Didn't pay. So I'd kill meat and sell to the fox farms on the side, see? Bucking the law there, see?
Well, I was just thinking that they had to pay the freight on that stuff up here to Fairbanks by a boat. The freight was coming in on the railroad. Came up the train from Anchorage.
From 23, yeah.
Oh, I see.
See, the railroad had finished in 1923.
Sure.
I started freighting in 28. 28 and 29 is the 2 years I run that. I run over the Steese Highway up to the Circle, too.
Oh, you did? So,
yeah, when it first, that Steese Highway, Colonel Steese, I think that's named
that. That's right.
Yeah. And then Ollie Sterling. He was the Sterling Highway was named after Ollie Sterling. He was the superintendent of the Road Commission, which is the Bureau of Public Roads now, right here in Fairbanks.
Now, tell me, did you know Ollie Sterling?
Yeah, I knew him. Knew his wife, too.
They lived here?
They lived here, yeah.
Let's see, which one is the Sterling Highway? I'm trying to think.
The one going to Saldotna. From Saldotna.
Oh, yes, that's the Kenai Peninsula.
Down to Homer.
Sure.
Saldotna to Homer is a...
I was trying to put it up in this area somewhere, and it
and
didn't
Ike Taylor. I knew Ike Taylor.
Ike Taylor, yes.
The Taylor Highway. That goes there 14 miles, Tetlin Junction, 14 miles the other side of
Toke
Junction. You turn and go up the hill there.
Up to Eagle and to...
Eagle, 169 miles. Then you cut off at 101 mile and go up and go to Dawson. Up by King George King's Roadhouse. And up over there's a road goes to Dawson there. 8 miles above it is the Lion. They got a redcoat up there.
Yeah, I was over there this summer.
Yeah, there's a redcoat right up there.
There sure is.
On top, he wouldn't let me take no guns. So I had to take my guns and back 3 or 4 years ago I went through. But I had to bring them back down to that.
Well, and going back to
Roadhouse, George King's Roadhouse.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and you left them there?
I left them there until I come back. I was only over there about a week.
Hmm.
To Dawson.
Well, now when you were freighting here, then in 29 or whatever it was.
28 and 29.
And I was going to say, then the freight came into Fairbanks and then you took it back
south. Yeah,
so that made pretty high freight.
About 4 cents a pound.
Yeah, and that would be hard to make money, I imagine, too.
Well, you had to handle a little whiskey on the side.
I see.
Sell whiskey to these roadhouses.
Sure enough. Well, did you have your own steel?
You was in Prohibition. Yes, I had my own.
You did?
I made it in the wintertime, sold it in the summer.
How about that?
About 1,800 gallons.
Where did you have your steel?
Right in the middle of Fairbanks.
You did?
Yeah.
Was everybody making their own whiskey here?
No, just a few of us.
Just a few of you?
Yeah, that was a commercial business then.
Oh.
As long as you get by with it. If you got caught, you was a fool, see?
I see. It was a legitimate business as long as you didn't get caught.
You considered it a commercial business.
Sure.
Sure, it was a commercial business. But you was bucking the law. If you got caught, it was your fault, see? Let's put it that way. Sure.
Well, what did you use? How did you make it?
Well, I made it out of corn whiskey. Corn, about 10 pounds of corn, and all to every 50 gallons of water, about 80 to 100 pounds of sugar. 5 to 7 days at a certain heat of about 90 degrees is your best. 90 degrees Fahrenheit. And you can run it off in about 6 or 7 days. Then you can take and age it with electric needle. And you put the coloring in by... You can get any color you want. I can make you a 20-year-old whiskey in 72 hours.
Is that right?
And color it for you so you just the prettiest whiskey color you ever saw. By browning, p- peach, dried peaches in an oven till they don't quite burn them, just slight till they're brown, and then put high grade, 160, 180 proof in there, and it'll just absorb that color right out, and that prettiest color you ever saw.
And a little good flavor, too, I bet.
And it flavors it.
Sure.
That browning of those dried peaches, dried apricots, gives you the flavor along with it. And really, the flavor comes from your keg. Use new kegs for good whiskey. Oak kegs, oak shavings. That gives you a coloring and also, but to get it quick, you have to leave it in that oak shavings for a few months to get a good color out of it. But you can take these peaches and get it right now, see? Peach coloring and get it right now and age it with an electric needle.
Well, what do you mean an electric needle?
Put it right down in there and let it burn. Electric, you can see it working. You can see it working off of the points of the regular electric needle, electric point, see?
Great big. It's about 18 inches long.
Just about that long, yeah.
I see.
Set it down in a keg, put it in a bunghole, see?
Yeah.
You fill up and then put it down in there for about 18 to 20 hours.
How about that?
Oh, I made lots of whiskey, sure.
And pretty good stuff, then?
Good stuff. Yeah.
Didn't take three layers of skin off your throat?
Didn't drink too much of it myself. I was in business.
Sure. Yeah, well, you can't afford to consume your own product.
You can't do it. Can't drink your own. In other words, you can't be your best customer.
Right.
Not in that business.
No.
No.
No, you'd never get it sold that way.
No, you'd never make any money. I've known fellas now. What's that halfway house? That George and Ann's place. Halfway between, call it the halfway house. Between Palmer and Anchorage.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know where that
yes.
is? George's place? He does that. He's been out there for over 20 years.
Yes?
I believe George has been drunk for 20 years.
Is that right? Yes. Uh-huh.
I don't believe he's ever been, he never
sober.
Gets quite sober.
Sure.
I've known him for years. He's from Texas, too. He used to be a bartender around town in those places years ago. 25 years ago. He went out there 20-some-odd years ago. And, if he makes too much money, he just close up and drink it all up.
That's too bad.
And open up again.
That's too bad, yeah.
Well, some people get that way.
Well, yeah. I know they do.
They're just alcoholics.
Yes, that's right.
There's nothing you can do to help an alcoholic. He can't quit himself. If you try to help him, you harm him. I believe.
I have known a few people who will tell you they're an alcoholic and they never touch it. You know, and they say this is the only way, the only person that can help an alcoholic is another alcoholic.
And I have,
through the years, I've known quite a few people who have, you know, they'll mark the anniversary. Yeah. It'll be 10 years today since I touched it.
There's a few of them that can do it.
There's a few of them that can do it, yes.
Yeah, there's a few of them, but they're very scarce.
Yeah.
It's
kind of a sad...
I know a lot of my friends that were not alcoholics years ago turned out to be some of the worst winos in the state. This up here.
Yeah.
Whether it's the country or what it is, I don't know. They might be just as bad outside, I don't know.
Well, there's a lot of liquor. There's a lot of alcoholism outside. Yeah. They've got the drying tanks all over the country now.
I believe there's more drinking done up here per person than there is outside of per person.
Well, we have the conditions to promote it, you know. When the winter is long and cold,
you've got everything here. You got outside putting here.
Yeah.
Why is it?
Well, I don't know.
Tell me, why is it? It was different several years ago when you were stuck out in the country, like Ernie Sun's place out there at Gokona, something like that, where you could just get a radio, and it'd cost you $1,000 to own a radio in them years. Keep it up. Well, tubes and stuff were so expensive. But now, in a town like Anchorage, town like this, why you can get that satellite, you can get anything you can get outside. Nearly, why is it that people can't content themselves? I'm perfectly contented here in Alaska. Alaska's been good to me. I'm well enough off. I got plenty of money. I'm not stuck anywhere. Got a good income. We'll have as long as I live.
How did you manage that?
Why, from building, construction, selling. I built modern homes in Anchorage and sold them.
Then my did daughter, you invest the money?
My daughter and I own a $60,000 apartment house there now.
Is that right?
3-unit out in Mountain View. She's running it, yeah.
That's wonderful.
She takes care of it.
Yes.
This is her husband here. He was up here last Sunday.
Oh, in the newspaper page.
That's him right there.
Kenneth Baker.
Well, the superintendent.
Oh, he's a superintendent of a school.
The Denali School.
The Denali School.
Oh, Ninth Avenue, that. Yeah.
Nice looking gentleman.
Yeah, he's 52, she's 50.
Hmm. Well, go on and tell me now. Gee, I think that's most interesting. You know, I never talked to anybody that ran a still before. I think that's quite exciting, you know.
I can make as good a whiskey as anybody in the South.
Well, you know,
in Tennessee or
there's so much good liquor available today that people,
sure,
not too many, produce their own.
Yeah, I was a commercial business with me up until I went outside.
Mm-hmm.
Up until I went to Kennecott.
Mm-hmm.
For till 1928 and 29. Mm-hmm. I had to make that freight line pay. That's the way my freight line paid.
Yes, selling the liquor on the side.
Selling the liquor on, mm-hmm, the side. I didn't sell by the quart, I sold by the gallon. Very few gallons. All 5 gallons and 10 gallons.
I see. All right, now you sold this to the roadhouse operators?
All roadhouses, yeah.
I was going to ask you, did you get oak? Did you get very many oak kegs?
Did you
use
oak kegs?
Mm-hmm.
We'll buy them new right in the wholesale there in here in Fairbanks. There was a fella handled them there, and handled it, and you could get feed. What's his name? Had a cow ranch out there. He's right here.
Charlie Creamer. Yes.
He had a beast. He bought feed. He had chickens out there feeding. We'd buy that cracked corn and rye. See, rye whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
And put average of 10 pounds of cracked rye and use it 2 to 3 different times. In fact, the second batch was used the second time but better than the first.
Is that right?
Because it was working a little then,
mm-hmm,
see, don't you see? It'd be. But after 3 times, it was used up. So we'd replace it with, mm-hmm, new.
How about that? And how much sugar?
To about, I use 80 to 100 pounds to 50 gallons of water. You can get 5, 6, and 7 gallons of whiskey out of one of those,
mm-hmm,
batches. I made tanks most of the time. Big 600 and 800 gallon tanks. I was running on a larger scale. And that way mine was larger batches, see.
Where was your still located?
I had a 60 gallon still around one. About that big around, about that high. On top of a stove, kitchen stove. Yeah.
And you were living right downtown?
Right in the middle of Anchorage.
On Third?
It was over in Grail.
In Grail?
Yeah. Smith's, two-story house. Gunstar Smith on Second Avenue. I rented from him. Then that's one winter, and another winter up on Noble, 8th and Noble, in an old, house, long, low, log house.
Can't think what's right there. What's there right now?
What?
It's getting down toward the Traveler's Inn.
Wally enters it. Traveler's Inn sits right where it was.
Oh, it does?
Right where it was, yeah. Right where the Traveler's Inn is,
yes,
right now.
Yes, that's where they...
Wally
is.
Hickel, yeah, right in that, right.
Wally's got his liquor in there now.
Yeah, just a block from the graveyard.
Yes, sure. That's right. So that's, you rented a log house there and you had a still in there.
In there one winter. That's 1928. and 27, I guess it was. Or was it 28 and 29? I forget. 129 is 27 and 28.
I'll bet the old
because I went to Kennicott in 29.
I'll bet the WCTU gals really were upset about that.
Well, they didn't know anything about it until after it was over. Lynn Smith knew all about it. The
commissioner?
U.S. Even commissioner, he's a head guy there. What do you call him?
Magistrate?
Lynn Smith. No, he's a head. Four head of the division.
Well, not the FBI.
No. I forget what he is. Same as a sheriff. Same as a sheriff is in the
county. Oh, a marshal.
U.S. Marshal.
U.S. Marshal, yes.
Yeah, him and his head U.S. deputy was, his old May's dad worked in my crew too there. Pat O'Connor.
Oh, yes.
Connor boys, yeah.
Yes.
Pat and, what is the other name, Gerald? Gerald, wasn't it? No, what was it? He writes for the other one's in, Wildlife.
Fish and Wildlife?
Yeah. He's wrote stories for years in the magazines.
Well, anyways, did they come over and sample your brew and see how it was coming? They checked it out?
No, they didn't. No, they stayed away.
Oh, they did?
They bought from me.
They did?
Yeah, good for a 5 gallon about every 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Well,
putting there all the fellas working, men working for the lawyers and all, working for the government, you know, there's all government jobs. Putting there everybody at a government job.
And would you just store it in the house?
You'd
in
sell
these
them
big barrels?
Sell them, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'd put it in the barrels and let it age until summertime and I'd sell it.
I see.
Freight it down over the trail. I'd sell it for 5 gallon kegs to the, as much as 5 and 10s to the roadhouses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd store up several hundred gallons.
What price would you get for a 5 or 10 gallon
$75, $15 a gallon.
$15 a gallon,
I think. Cost me $2.85 to make it, the way we had it figured. And it's according to your water, how much whiskey you got. From 5 to 7 gallons out of every 100 pounds of sugar.
So well, by the time you figure the time involved, and you're actually making your living this way, you know, it's a lot more expensive than just the materials that go into it.
Wintertime, your time was like an Indian's, wasn't worth nothing.
Yeah?
See, you don't work here in the winter.
Well, that's true.
Not in those years. You didn't count your time.
Yeah.
Well, I was making a profit of $2.85 to $15.
Yes.
But my costs had to come out of that. Other costs of freighting it over the road. So.
Yes.
But the cost of buying the material for it was $2.85. So I had a good profit margin there.
Yes. About how much would you produce through the winter?
About 1,800 gallons.
I see.
Every year for 2 years. I only made it 2 years. And then I got out of it. You know, you get too well known. And after a couple of 3 years, those pro hires get kind of